What's up, guys? This is Uriah Faber, the California Kid, here with Greg Conley, serial entrepreneur, founder of Trifecta Nutrition. We're talking about everything under the sun, fitness, entertainment, and of course, business, making that money. What's up, guys? Uriah here. The Cali Cast is back. I'm here with Greg Conley,
my
partner, and we're here to talk about everything under the sun, business, entertainment, nutrition, sport, and everything fun. So, blessed to have an awesome guest in the house today. We've got Hurricane Nita. Not only is she beautiful and very talented, a woman that is very in tune with her body and knows about getting in shape, the struggles and the celebrations about it, but also one of the best guitar players on the planet, if not the best female guitar player on the planet, playing alongside Alice Cooper, amongst a bunch of other cool stuff. And so, thank you for joining us.
I like that. Thank you very much for having me. I feel very welcome.
Awesome.
Thank you.
That's right. Yeah, we're pumped to have you in here.
Thank
Obviously, you know, this cast is about a bunch of different things, but entertainment is one of them, and you're obviously doing massive things on that front. You're also an avid, you know, fitness guru, in my opinion.
Thank you.
Being able to accomplish what you've been able to accomplish. You've lost some major weight throughout the years, right?
Yeah, that's right.
What was it exactly?
It's the big 5-0, 50 pounds.
Wow.
I lost. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Impressive.
You ever lost 50 pounds, Greg?
No.
Okay, me neither.
Because you guys didn't have it to lose. You got to get real lazy first before you can lose 50 pounds.
I've lost some very uncomfortable amounts of weight that I didn't need to lose, but that was just to make weight and get some money. Fight, and I put it right back on within like 12 hours. So. Different kind of weight loss. So I think it's really interesting, the Strauss name.
Mm-hmm.
There's some musical history to the Strauss name. What's the famous composer back in the 1600s?
So Johann Strauss is the Austrian composer. You guys probably would know the famous song, not by name, but if you go da 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 da. Dun, dun,
oh wow!
Dun,
oh,
yeah,
dun,
yeah.
Dun, dun, and nobody
She's
critique my singing. I'm not a singer. I'm a guitar player. But it's enough to know, you know, to know what song that is. So, I think having some kind of musical lineage, you know, or whatever lineage it is that you have, kind of inspires you to work harder and do better in whatever your field is, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of crazy. I mean, you know, Greg, things are genetic. As weird as that is, even temperament, like in babies. I was a human development major at Davis, and I mean, so there's just some things that are genetic in personality and skill set and intelligence and things like that. And a lot of things are environment as well. But it's just interesting that you're shining in that field and have a lineage that goes back that far. I actually have a musical lineage myself.
Oh, really?
And got zero of it. So
really?
It's not everybody that lucks out, yeah.
Well, my mom was a dance teacher and my dad was a musician. My little sister is a Pilates instructor and I'm a musician. So I got absolutely zero dance ability, as my boyfriend Josh will attest to. and my sister got a little musical ability, but so they each kind of got one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. And you mentioned your boyfriend, Josh. I was just reading a sad Instagram post about his cat that passed away. So rest in peace.
We love you, Sabu.
Sabu. And it's so funny. Until I walked in here, I didn't realize that your boyfriend / manager / a bunch of other stuff and friend of Greg's and also a big team player for Trifecta is a good buddy of mine. I've known Josh for eight or 9 years or so.
Right.
And back when he used to drum with you know, the 3-6 Mafia and doing a bunch of introductions, always a guy was making connections happen. So it's awesome to see that he's part of your world and your success.
Yeah. And now he's my drummer.
That's it. He's badass. Doing it full circle.
Nice.
And so, Greg, how did you get a hold of Hurricane Nita and how do we – you know, get blessed with her being in the gym, in the facility today.
Connect the dots. It was largely through Josh. Josh has worked with us on the Trifecta side. And obviously, you know, Nita has got an awesome fitness journey. You can tell us the whole bodybuilding.com, you know, backstory behind it. But,
yeah.
You know, it's she fits a good cross demographic for us where she's, you know, famous musician, obviously playing with one of the most popular bands in the world, but also has an amazing fitness and nutrition story that, you know, most people can relate to, which is awesome for us.
Thank you. So yeah, what's the story behind the losing the 50 pounds? Is that something you just decided to do one day, or was that,
you know? I mean, gosh, all roads lead back to Josh. We should probably just get him up here. but you know, it's, you know, I was always fit. I was fit as a kid. You know, I was doing gymnastics and ballet from the time I could walk, you know, and got up to the point where I was an alternate on the junior Olympic team. And then at 12 years old, I started playing the guitar. And once you find that one thing that you're supposed to do, I think we can all agree, everything else fades into the background. And I stopped doing gymnastics. I stopped doing everything else. And I was just hyper-focused on playing music. And that's not always the most healthy lifestyle. You know, you hear all the road stories about people that go on the road, people go on tour drinking and eating bad and partying and whatnot. And it's really easy to fall into that lifestyle and those traps. And it took me a long time to realize that there's a way to follow your dreams and go after your passion and be around all these things and not get totally sucked into that lifestyle. Cause it's fun, you know, going out and getting drunk is fun.
Yeah, like, I was gonna say, you gotta tell us like what it's like behind the scenes being at an actual major concert like that. Is it pizza and beer everywhere? I mean, give us the behind the scenes.
It's so much more boring than you'd think, honestly. Like it's you know, everyone expects these crazy rock star stories about girls and booze and drugs and crazy stuff. I mean, everybody, you know, it's 2018. Everybody's kind of on this health kick, which is great for all of us and great for, you know, as all the guys in my band will say, we're very grateful to have healthy food like Trifecta on the road, because it means we don't have to only eat the pizza and we can actually stay on track and keep things, you know, at a sort of normal functioning level when there's food that you know is going to be there every day. You know what your macros are. You know you're going to say, okay, I'm going to get up. I'm going to have my egg whites from the fridge, have a protein shake or whatever, and then I'm going to have my turkey patty and my rice, and that's how you're going to get your macros in for the day. Where before, it was such a challenge. It was such a huge endeavor. You know, you're out in Topeka and the bus is parked 5 miles from anywhere that you know where to eat. And the only thing around the corner is a McDonald's. So you're like, well, I'm eating McDonald's today. Mm-hmm. And that's the only option. Or you take a $15 Uber to go get a $30 meal and then you take a $15 Uber back. It just doesn't make sense. So having something like, I don't think you guys even realize what a blessing Trifecta is for those that travel constantly and want to stay in shape on the road. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, it's the same thing with the fight game. I remember my buddy, one of my best friends, he was like, dude, you're world champion. You should be doing this and doing that. And it was all the stuff that he wanted to do because I was a champion, like
Right. Throwing
parties and having chicks over, blah, blah, all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's a great way to lose the belt and and be a has-been is to follow that demographic. Do what your buddy wants you to do so he can have a good time while you're the champ. And yeah. I think probably what Greg's envisioning for your rock star status is more like what it was like being at Chico State for a couple of years. Yeah. Like pizza, keggers, crazy chicks, yeah. Floating down the river, drinking beer, pouring beers all over your face.
It can be. It can be for sure. But that, you know, that kind of stuff, like that's how that 50 pounds got there. You know, like that's, you know, you go out on the road, you're hanging out, you know, you're hanging out with your buddies and think about the schedule. You know, like you get up, you get to the venue, let's say soundcheck's at 4 p.m. So, you know, you have a beer or two there. You know, you go meet the fans. You have a beer or two there.
What time are you usually getting there? Like 10 a.m.?
No, noon? We usually get there around 4.
Oh, around 4. For soundcheck, okay. Yeah. Got it.
So, but let's just say, you know, you have the morning or whatever, do whatever. You get there, you have a couple beers, maybe you have a drink during the show. Then after the show, you're hanging out with a band or, you know, friends or whatever. You're having a couple cocktails there. Then you get on the bus. You've been drinking for like 6 hours at this point, and there's all this fresh pizza. So you're eating, you know, all this pizza, having a couple more beers, and then you go to sleep. And, you know, you go to sleep and you're sleeping on the bus peacefully and all that stuff is just sitting in your stomach and, you know.
Yeah, what's happening is breaking down and it's getting stored like humans. That's the one thing the human digestive tract doesn't wait. It just, whatever it's put in there, it goes through the process. And, you know, the more you eat, the more you sit, the fatter you're going to get. And vice versa, the more you work out and the less you eat, the skinnier you're going to get. There's a, you know, the science.
Pretty simple.
Yeah, the science isn't too crazy.
And this is all happening at the end of the night, too, by the way. So this is all starting at 4 p.m. and going till midnight. So this is at, you know, 11:30, 12, 1 o'clock. You're stuffing your face with all that pizza because at that point you've been drinking. All your willpower is gone. So you're like, pizza, ice cream,
that's when you start booty calling people to get the last workout in.
Well, you're in a tin can traveling 60 miles an hour down the highway.
Oh, that sounds like a little...
Buzzkill.
Sounds like a good time.
So, do you guys usually play like multiple nights back to back to back, all week long? I mean, so how long does it go in succession?
We're usually on tour about 9-10 months out of the year, and we play 5 shows a week. And then, of course, on the days off, you know, let's go back to Topeka. Nothing against Topeka; it's a great place, but let's just go back there because there's not much. Anybody from Topeka is with me. There's not much to do around there. You know, what do? You go to the bar. Right? Mm-hmm. Like you know, you get together the guys and the crew and the band or whatever, you find the bar near the hotel, and that's what you do with the day off. You just hang, you know, bullshit and you know, watch the fights or watch football game or whatever and you have a couple of drinks. And before you realize it, that's 7 days a week that you're drinking and partying. Then you get home, you haven't seen your friends in a while. What do? You go to the bar. Mm-hmm. And you know, and so before you realize it, it becomes this lifestyle. You're not like, oh, I gotta get drunk today. It's just what you do.
Yeah, it's just a habit. Yeah. Healthy habits and the opposite. I mean, you're creating habits every day. You put your pants on the same foot every single day and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When you get into habits, it's hard to break those. So it's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah,
now,
for sure.
Who put the first guitar in your hands? How did you just, you know, find that passion? You said that you have some music in your family, obviously. So were they testing it out? They give you the drums first or this or that? Like, how'd you stumble upon the guitar? How old were you, and what did that look like?
It was my dad.
Really?
Yeah, it was my dad. And he did exactly that. He gave me drums first. And I love playing drums. Like, I'll still play drums at home. You know, Josh has got a drum set at our house, and I'll still sit and play a little bit. But then I decided to take my drum set apart and take it to a friend's house to play at their house. And I said, never again. This is not for me. this is not for me. So I got rid of the drums. And
how old are you at this time?
12.
Okay.
I was 12, and I was still doing gymnastics. And then I got a bass, or I was playing my dad's bass, I think, and I wasn't any good at it. It just didn't speak to me. And then my dad got me this $99 guitar. And it was this crappy little black and white Korean-made, you know, a Squire Strat. And it was $99, and it came with a little amp and a little cable and some guitar picks and some stuff. So it's just the cheapest little kid set you can get. And I was like, okay, this is cool. And I played a little bit. I wasn't super inspired. And then I saw a movie called Crossroads. Not the Britney Spears movie.
Crossroads?
Not the Britney Spears movie.
I know the one she's talking about.
So this one has the Karate Kid in it. This one has Ralph Macchio in it. And for
you
anybody,
you
got to see it. It's
they're doing the new Cobra Kai right now.
Oh, it's so good.
Have you been watching it?
Oh, it's so good.
I keep getting sponsored push notifications to go look at it.
It's that good.
It looks great.
It's that good.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it really?
Yes.
It doesn't surprise me. I give 100% total.
Wow.
100 tomatoes.
That's awesome.
10 tomatoes. But so I saw this other Crossroads, the real Crossroads. And essentially, like, for, you know, you got to see it, so I won't spoil the ending. But it's essentially the story of a young guitar player that's finding who they want to be in the world. And at the end of the movie, there's this epic guitar battle. And that guitar battle scene was the scene that made me sit up and take notice and say, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Wow.
And literally, from that point forward, I mean, I went back to the gym one time. And this is the gym that I had been basically living at since I could walk. And I went back to the gym one time. And I remember it so clearly, like it was yesterday. Like, my coach, I had this really tough Ukrainian coach. Like, they had this team that was all, like, Ukrainians and Russians and stuff. Like, really serious. And I had practice, let's say, at 5. It was 5:15. And I remember I walked in the gym, my coach went, mm-mm, you're late. You know, like, she just tapped her watch and shook at me. I shook her head and I said, I know. And I went in the locker room, I grabbed my gym bag and I left. And I never went back. And I never even said thank you, which I feel horrible about. But like,
wherever but like, you are, she feels
yes,
bad.
I do feel horrible. But in that moment, in that single-minded moment of focus, I was like, that light bulb was like so bright in my head. I was like, this is what I'm supposed to do with the rest of my life.
Wow.
And I have never done anything else. Like, I've never focused. I never had a plan B. I never went to college. You know, I dropped out of high school to go on tour. And it was just because I knew, and you know, my parents knew, and everybody knew. My parents said, if you get your GED, they kind of jokingly said, if you get your GED, you can drop out and you can go on this tour. So I went online, I looked up when the next GED test was, and it was like 4 days later. It was like less than a week later. And I went and took the test, and I passed it. And I said, all right, I'm going. And I don't think they expected that.
They regretted that one. They're like, damn it.
Like, you know, the internet probably didn't have that word.
They had the, you know, they had the, you know, the test prep courses, and I'm sure they thought I would have to take the test prep course and stay in school that long. But I said, well, let me just give it a shot. I took the shot, and I passed.
And so you were, you were what, 15?
15.
At this point. Yeah, oh, wow. So you 15. Were young. Okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm sorry. I was 15 when I went on my first tour. I went back and did another year of high school. I dropped out after junior year.
Okay.
So 16. Okay. Yeah. So it was, and it was the best education I could possibly have gotten, you know, because I wanted to be a musician. And the best education that you can possibly have is doing something. Like, and I'm sure you have the same experience. You know, you can study books about fight technique and judo and, you know, like how in theory to get on the ground and wrestle and whatnot. But until you just get out there and wrestle a bunch of people, you're never going to get there.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And something I'm sure you can relate, Greg and Josh, we've got Josh in the studio also, about that obsession that you talked about and the full commitment that you talked about. A lot of people are afraid. Fear stops so many people from attacking these passions because it doesn't make a lot of sense sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I talk to my guys every day after practice. Today after practice, I taught wrestling practice. And I said, look, there's guys in here that are obsessed right now. And there's a kid, I always talk about him, Cleo Romero. He got locked in the gym on a Sunday. I got a call from him on Sunday. He's like, hey, Faber, I'm locked in the gym. I just went out and I set the alarm off. I didn't see everybody left, but I was the last one in here. He's the first one in, last one out.
Yeah.
And I'm saying there's an obsessive part of a rise to greatness that has to happen. And it trumps laziness. Yes. It trumps bad habits. It trumps where you come from a background, from, you know, whether you come from a good background or a bad background. Obsession and passion will trump all that, and you'll become obsessed to be great.
1,000%.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't teach that. It either happens or it doesn't happen. You know, Greg, I've talked with you about the business side of things and how, you know, I love hearing Greg talk, because he'll talk about, well, it should be this long before we're a $1 billion company, and this before that, and blah blah blah. Like, people that are thinking like that, it's not like they're talking to talk or thinking I might make it. You knew.
Yeah.
When you're 13, 14 years old, like, this is what I want to do, and now I'm going to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I love that passion. I love the commitment and the logic goes out the window. And you know, for me, I was there was no opportunity for me. I was a 133-pound wrestler that was going into a fight game that had 170 pounds and three fights a year. But I was like, I'm going to do it.
Right. Yeah, totally. I remember so many times since that happened, people have asked me, you know, especially in the last 4 years since I started playing with Alice Cooper, people said, you know, I do these interviews and they say, would you ever have imagined that you would be where you are right now? And I hate to sound like a dick, but
fuck yeah, dude.
I honestly never imagined that I wouldn't be where I am right now, you know, and I had the chance to go to SBG and where Conor McGregor trains in Ireland and I didn't train there, but I went and I met his coach and stuff, and they have this big quote on the wall, and Conor said, I'm not talented, I'm obsessed. Mm-hmm. And that is exactly how I feel about it. I mean, I remember all the years and years that I spent, you know, when I was in school learning how to play guitar, and I didn't have any friends in my school. You know, I had one friend and you know, and she didn't want to hang out with me 100% of the time. And I would just sit on the bleachers and I'd watch, you know, the football team practice, or I'd watch the kids, other kids doing stuff and talking on their phones. And I would just sit on the bleachers by myself and play guitar. And I wasn't like, oh man, no one wants to talk to me. No one has to hang out with me. Like, that was what I wanted to do. I wanted to sit there and play guitar.
This is my time, guys. Can you back off, please?
This is what I'm doing. Yeah. You know, you have 15 minutes between classes. I'd sit and play guitar for 10 minutes. I'd walk out of the class, take my guitar out of the case, sit on the bench, play some guitar, put the guitar back in the case, go to class. And it was never like this weird obsession of like, oh, I have to practice for 10 minutes or I won't get good enough. That was just what I wanted to do. Like, all I wanted to do was play guitar.
And that's the dot I think most people don't connect, is the obsession, whether it was in like wrestling in the fight game, or, you know, playing guitar, which, you know, led to you being a famous musician, or business. It's, it's the obsession that leads to the huge amount of hours that you're putting in, just, you know, wrestling hundreds of people, yes, or playing guitar on the bleachers. You know, obviously you were well beyond people, you know, going on tour at 16, which is like a mind-blowingly young age, you know, that over time you're just putting in thousands and thousands of hours playing guitar, and now, you know, you're the best guitar player in the world because of it. And that's, you know, that's the dot I think people don't connect, is they're like, oh, I tried for a couple hours today. And it's like, no, it is that obsession that leads to the time commitment,
yes,
that leads to the greatness. And, you know, connecting all those dots for people, I think most people just don't put it all together.
Yeah. And Josh, we talked to Josh. We keep referring to Josh. He's in the room here, but
come say hi, baby.
Yeah, come say hi. Come on here real quick, Josh. Say what's up. So Josh is my buddy from way back. And, you know, also a big part of her secret recipe for success is people that believe in you and are thinking outside the box and making things happen. But he was saying, like, you know, and we want to talk about this, some of the struggles that you've had and whatnot. Yeah. It's funny when people see you on stage with Alice Cooper and they're like, oh, there she is. She just dropped in from the sky. And that's what Josh is saying. They think Uriah Faber just dropped in and now he's fighting in the UFC holding the belt. It's like, what about the struggles, the hard times? I mean, I was bussing tables and coaching kids and working in a job that was well below poverty line pay and doing things like that you know, there's no real opportunity, no pathway, etc. What are some of the struggles? I mean, Josh, I'm sure you've seen them also, and you kind of referenced one. What's a good story that you could prompt her to tell us that that she may not want to?
Oh no.
I think one of the most important ones is probably how, you know, when I used to hear her do the guitar clinics, she would tell the stories of how she practiced all these hours and did all that stuff. And I thought that was cool. I thought that was, wow, that's great. And these people that are here, obviously want to hear your guitar playing. But I think the biggest thing with people is they want to feel a connection with somebody. They want to feel, how can I relate to this person? Yeah, they're playing guitar, but they're so far beyond me. It's going to take me hours and days and years to get like that. But the ultimate connection is, everybody can share the same path. Everybody can share the same, man, I've been there before. I can relate to that. I've, you know, somebody bust tables like you, and, you know, you can see that and be like, well, man, he did that? Well, okay, I'm on the same path he was. And with her was, I would tell her, I was like, you know, tell your story, tell your struggle, tell how hard it was for you to get there. Some people just think because she's a hot chick that she just fell out of the earth and just boom, put a guitar in her hand.
She liked that. She's like, that's right, recognize.
Put her guitar in her hand, and then all of a sudden she's, here she is with Alice Cooper, who is known to have the best musicians in the world. Everybody that's ever been in his band has an amazing reputation for that. You have to earn that.
Yeah.
It's not given to you. It doesn't just come out of the sky. You have to earn that. It comes from within. But her touring story when she first started, I thought that was such a important thing to tell people because they can relate to it. She can take over from that.
Why don't you give us the tour story, how that went down? Because, I mean, I imagine, you know, you don't go from zero to hero. Even Bieber got discovered on YouTube and, you know, is him playing drums as a baby, all, you know, aggro as a baby, like having this crazy rhythm and whatnot, and then, you know, getting discovered there. But it's very rare where you just go from zero to hero. What
were
the
struggles?
Did you
see that documentary, the Justin Bieber documentary?
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if I ruined my metal street cred by saying that. I watched that documentary.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And I saw Justin Bieber busting his ass, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go do radio and stuff and do promo and do all that.
Crying because his fans wanted to see him, but he was sick and all this stuff, you know?
I mean, you know, it's even Justin Bieber that is the quintessential overnight success. He worked his ass
grinding
off, for sure. And that was...
Now he can do whatever the heck he wants.
Yeah, and he does.
And he does.
More power to him.
Which he maybe should do less.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the struggles on the road.
Yeah, so, you know, Josh, you know, when we first started dating, you know, we started talking about touring and we started talking about all this stuff. And at one point I started telling him my story and he came and saw me do my workshops, and he goes, why don't you tell people about this? And I thought, no one wants to hear about this. And he said, yeah, trust me, people want to know, you know, regardless of whether it's I've been there before or maybe I'm not working hard enough. So I started telling the stories in my clinics. I started talking about how we were just a band of four girls that went out on a 2-month national tour you know, with no boys, no dudes, no techs, no parents, just a bunch of teenage girls playing heavy metal music.
Wait, I got to interrupt you quick.
Yeah.
Is it true that Michaela Mayer was part of this band?
I was just about to say, Michaela. I was literally about, that was my next sentence.
You travel with greatness. I mean, you're one of the best guitar players on the planet, best female on the planet. And Michaela Mayer is one of the best boxers on the planet. She's a professional boxer, has trained out with Team Alpha Male a little bit, and her you know, boxing speaks for itself as a silver medalist. That's pretty cool. So you guys are from the same area?
Yeah, born and raised in, like, right up the street from each other.
So she was in your first, but that's a tough.
Yeah.
Olympic medalist for your boxing in boxing for your band. That's a hardcore band.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? She was tough as hell even back then, Michaela. I remember you. I remember all your El Camino stories. I know she's going to watch this, but she, you know, like, she was always the super work hard, take no prisoners type. So, like, watching her success first, you know, first in Muay Thai and then in boxing and now in professional boxing, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest, because I remember that stubbornness and that determination that she had. And I mean, I'm talking about, we were like, you know, she's a couple years younger than me, so we were probably 14 and 16 on this tour.
So you guys were driving around this tour.
Driving around this tour. Michaela and I were the only ones that couldn't drive. The other two had to do all the driving because Michaela and I didn't have our driver's licenses yet. So Michaela and I, it was four girls in a truck. You know, most bands tour in a van. We had a van, and our van broke down two exits on the freeway. So we go, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? So we had to borrow, if I remember correctly, we had to borrow our drummer's parents' truck. And we were leaving from Los Angeles, and we weren't going to be back. We were leaving in July, we weren't going to be back until September. Oh, geez. And we had to borrow our drummer. We left our van on the side of the 101 freeway.
Wow.
And we connected our trailer with our equipment in it to the truck. And we had this energy drink endorsement, and all the energy drinks had been piled up between the seats in the van, and there was no room. So what we had to do, and the truck was just a little truck with this, you know, the two people in the front, that was all it could fit. So we piled the energy drink pallets in the back of the pickup truck, and then we put the camper top on the truck, and we put a blanket on top of the cans, and that would, Michaela and I would be in the back of the truck on the cans, and then the other two would switch off driving up front. And it seems like Michaela and I had the nicer part of it, but you got to think, you know, it's the middle of July. We're driving through Texas, Arizona, like the hottest places in the world in the day and the coldest places at night. So, you know, and there's no AC or anything. It's the back of a pickup truck, right?
Yeah.
So it was hot as hell during the day. It was freezing cold at night. You know, we didn't have we had one cell phone between the four of us, and it was Michaela's. So she was always on it. We had one cell phone between the four of us, and it was hers. And we would use it to all call our parents at night and tell them that we were okay. And
wow, that's crazy.
And we were just kids. You know, we didn't have day jobs. We didn't have savings accounts. You know, we were going out there on tour, and we did some shows with Vans Warped Tour, and then we were doing our own shows on the day off to try to make, you know, some merch money to get us to the next show. And, you know, imagine four teenage girls trying to hustle promoters for money, like, to get paid after the show. And we were so hungry, and we were so thirsty, and we were so tired. And I remember, you know, because somebody had to stay up and keep the driver awake. So, you know, because we were driving ourselves through the night a lot of the time. So we were all exhausted. And, you know, there was no trifecta nutrition. We were eating food from the gas stations, and we were trying to, you know, hustle at the merch table. And, you know, we were selling our energy drinks that we got free with our endorsement. We were selling them for $1 at our merch table to make money to put in the gas tank to get to the next place. And trying to, you know, they tried to put one of our songs on the mixtape of the stage we were playing on Warped Tour. And then it was something like, when we got there, they're like, oh no, you don't get a cut of the sales. This is free for promo. So this big piece of money that we thought we were going to be making, this cut of the mixtape, was gone. And it was all these little things, but
jeez,
you know, one thing after another, after
another. Where were you on that one, Josh?
Yeah, right. but, you know, but through all that, and I remember, you know, Michaela will back me up on this story, driving through Tornado Alley, seeing funnel clouds in our wake and seeing lightning crashing. Michaela and I are in the back, you know, watching the rain.
And on a bed of metal.
On a bed of tiny. You see how this looks like? Imagine waking up every day with 1,000 of these imprinted in your butt. That's what we did. But through all of that, I can never once remember wanting to quit. I can never once remember thinking, man, this sucks. This is the worst.
You're having the time of your life, probably.
We really were. You know, we were hungry and thirsty and tired and smelly. And, like, you know, when we would get a hotel room, it would be all four of us to a room, and we'd sleep in sleeping bags. And it was fun as hell. Like, we had so much fun. We were laughing and listening to music. And, like, it wasn't all fun. You know, of course, there were some tough times. And, of course, we got in some bitter arguments about what to put on the radio or whatever. But by and large, you know, those are the best times of my life. And now I look at my touring experience and I go, man, you know, sometimes I tell Josh, oh my gosh, we're at a Holiday Inn or something, like we're at this crappy hotel. And I take a step back and think how grateful I would have been to have my own room at that Holiday Inn. And it kind of puts everything in perspective.
Absolutely.
And I think going back to, you know, back to the full circle of the story, why I started telling you at these clinics is some people are going to look at it and go, yeah, I have worked my ass off. I know that feeling. And if I keep grinding, maybe it'll happen for me. And then other people are going to go, damn, you have to work that hard? I didn't know I had to work that hard. I thought it was just going to happen. And then it, you know, maybe it'll inspire them to work harder, or maybe it'll inspire them to say, hey, you know what? Maybe move I should on. Be doing something else. Yeah.
Move on. Yeah, that's the story of Hard Knocks that happens also. And I love hearing about, you know, those struggles. And funny thing is, just like we're talking now, it sounds like a struggle at the time, I mean, right now, but at the time, it was like, you're living the good life. You're on tour, you're 14 or 15 years old, or
hanging
16 years old.
Friends.
You're on tour, traveling the country, making your own time, and getting to perform, doing things that you love. Like, that was the same with me. I didn't take a vacation for 7 years, and I keep telling my guys, like, guys, you know, I'm trying to set it up an easy path for them where they you know, have things, you know, so they're easier and everything else. But those struggles, they don't seem like struggles at the time. If they seem like struggles at the time, maybe you're doing the wrong thing.
Totally.
You know, because I was doing 17-hour days of, you know, I would coach wrestling at UC Davis. I was getting paid $7,000 a year.
Wow.
That. So that's well below the poverty line. That's full time, 10 months out of the year.
Wow.
Then I would go and I would coach kids with my own business, TLC coaching. Then I would bust tables at Inc. and try to get some extra food and stay up to like 4 and then get up and do it all again. But I was like cheating the system.
Yeah.
My room, my hotel, my apartment, I had the crappiest deal for an apartment. I was, you know, paying $220 a month. But, you know, for me, I was living the dream. And then you look back and you're like, oh, but the struggles. Doesn't it feel like a struggle when you're doing the stuff that you're passionate about?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I think, Greg, you probably have some really unique insight into this too, because I have to say, like, I'm here at Trifecta HQ with you guys for the first time. And to me, as an outsider, it kind of looked like, man, this meal company has got it made. Like, they got it made in the shade. They got all these cool people that got this delicious food. You know, like, I was the outsider, seeming like you guys just fell from the sky as this amazing thing. But hearing you talk a little bit about the company and everything you guys have gone through and everything you're putting into it really kind of opened my eyes to that as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the same with entrepreneurship. This is my fifth business technically, and I've been as far, this is probably a record, but I've been as far as $750,000 in debt, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And when you're first starting companies, you know, you're like, oh, I'll put things on credit cards and, you know, do this and that. And, you know, you try and get loans and all this type of stuff. And I mean, that's a huge amount of money.
Scary,
you're
like, I'm scared just hearing you say that.
Yeah, you're
did
like,
you
so,
fix it?
Yeah. No, obviously we're, you know, debt free now, but you know, it took me, you know, a long time to kind of get out of that.
Sure.
And I mean, there were times where, you know, we were so deep in debt, we weren't paying employees. This was at a previous company, but, you know, we weren't paying employees.
Right.
I actually got my car repossessed. So I was like in a situation where I was like, now I can't even drive to the office, you know, on top of that. So,
Uber, you have no money.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, I can totally relate. And it's just kind of having that tenacity to, you know, to keep going consistently. And, you know, it's, especially on what a lot of people I think don't realize on the business side is when you're the CEO, you're supposed to be the, you know, the woman or the man with the plan. So you don't want to like tell everybody how bad things really are. So you're just kind of like, yeah, you know, let's go do this project or get this done or, you know, whatever it is, and kind of keep the momentum up. And, you know, inside you're like, oh my God, we're not going to make it through the week. You know, like there's no way.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're just like desperately trying new things continuously. And eventually over time, you know, it works itself out, yeah. You know, yeah. No matter how much in debt you are, they never come to your house and take you away, you know.
Just your car.
Yeah, just your car. Yeah.
Persistence and creativity and grit and will get through a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a great product and great plan, et cetera. I mean, but yep. There's a lot of times where you know, especially with entrepreneurship, I'm an entrepreneur myself, mm-hmm. Where things do get scrapped and things do fall apart.
Cut
and that's
losses.
The next battle is getting back up and, mm-hmm. All right, do I get a job or I start a new thing or do I do both or whatever it is? So. Yeah. What you're saying reminds me of my first experience with, like, terrible turbulence. You know, you hear it on a plane, and all the time you hit a little turbulence, and the stewardess will be like, all right, everybody take a seat, and we're going to expect some turbulence, blah, 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 whatever. We had this horrible turbulence coming on, going to New York for the national tournament my senior year or my junior year in college, and it was like going, serving drinks, and the plane just goes, like, drops.
Gosh.
It goes doing, and it starts teetering back and forth, and like drinks are getting spilled and everything else. No one got on and said anything. The pilots didn't say anything. The stewardess didn't say anything for like 15, 20 minutes. I'm like,
Minutes.
Normally they'd be like, all right, well, when the lady does get on, normally it's like she's trying to sound confident and everything, and she was like, oh, we're good. Like her voice is all shaking. I'm like, oh, crap, we're going to die. I'm having me losing weight to go to the national tournament. And I lost like 7 pounds on that flight just from freaking out the whole time. But
so that's what you got to do. You just have to get like completely freaked out.
Yeah, as long as you don't shit yourself on that plane ride, you'll be all right.
No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're the pilot getting on and be like, listen up, everybody, everything's gonna be okay. We're $750,000 in debt. Man, I sold my car. The car's repossessed. We'll be okay.
Yeah, no, it totally is. The pilot in your case is probably up there going like, I don't know what the fuck to say.
Dude, it was scary.
You tell him.
Yeah. Have you guys ever been in bad turbulence? This is the worst turbulence I've been in, so I don't freak out until I get at least this or worse. But the plane's wings came out in like 3 levels and went like ch-ch-ch on the big planes.
Like mm-hmm. an X-wing?
Like it had like space in between each one. It was the first time I'd ever seen that.
I've never seen that.
It's
yeah,
kind of cool.
Yeah, I've had some huge drops where you're just.
It was terrible.
We had a bad one.
Yeah.
We had a bad one on a prop plane last year. I don't know whose idea it was to put us on this little plane, but somebody thought it would be more economical to put us on a plane for a few shows, like charter a plane for a few shows, rather than driving the bus. I think we were going out to like Lithuania or something, someplace out of the way that it made more sense than going over the mountains to take a plane. We had this same little plane for like a week. Was the scariest thing, and so we're like, oh, plane, psh, baller, like, and we get there,
private
and it was
plane
like,
too, yeah.
Oh no, I mean, this plane, like, I have, you know, because I always will send Josh a time lapse out the window of the plane of the takeoff and landing, and you see the things go, the propellers, like,
oh wow, really,
and,
like,
and it was
an
actual prop plane, and, like, so it was like starting because I have the time lapse. And if you like just go one at a time, you can see it's like very unevenly, like, and then we had those
crazy
big drops. Like, you know, we had a drop where everybody's drink, that if they had their drink on their tray table, just went straight up and splashed all over the ceiling. We all got Diet Pepsi rained down on us. Like, it's crazy.
Nice.
You know? Turbulence is
that's
no fun.
Scary thing. Turbulence is that's a metaphor for real life, though. I mean, life is a turbulent motherfucker, man.
Yes.
I mean, there's some ups and downs and you know, being able to stay focused and rise to the top of an industry like you've been able to do and have these little battles, like, you know, even losing 50 pounds, that's somebody else's, you know, a lot of people have those type of goals, but to do it on top of a traveling schedule, on top of being a businesswoman, on top of being a musician and entertainer, it's pretty impressive. So
yeah, give it. So we got one of the ups we got to mention since it's so awesome. Tell us about the signature guitar. I know that was a big, you know, life goal for you. You know, give us the backstory behind it. We know Josh was involved in this as well.
Yeah, all roads lead back to Josh. You know, so I play a brand of guitar called Ibanez guitars, mm-hmm. and all my heroes are Ibanez players. I said it once, I said it 1,000 times, you know. And when I first signed with Ibanez in 2008, you know, I basically went to them as a, you know, I guess I was 21 at the time. I went to them with my hat in hand. I said, you know, I've done some, I haven't done much, you know, but I work hard. Like, it was like Rocky, like, you know, asking for the You're fight. Like,
I can make it.
I won't take no cheap shots, you know. I said, if you be willing to take me on, and I said, just like I'm saying, I get emotional even now talking about it. I said, if you'd be willing to work with me, I would be so proud to represent this brand and play your guitars. And if not, I'll still proudly play your guitars, and maybe you'll work with me someday. And they took a chance on a young guitar player without much, you know, with a lot of local touring, but no big, you know, no big gigs under a belt. And I think it wasn't even, I think it was less than a year later that I was playing with Jermaine Jackson. Wow. So they took a chance on a young guitar player back then, and they didn't have to. I was the only girl on the roster back then, and they took a chance. And now, 10 years later, back then I was the first girl on the roster, and now I'm the first girl to have a signature series, which, you know, on their global artist roster, there's only, I think there's less than 20 signature artists. So being the first female was a huge, huge honor for me, and it still doesn't feel real.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. And it sounds like it's done really well so far.
It's been really amazing. Yeah, it's been, you know, it was released, it was announced, I guess, in January, and it's just blew all the expectations out of the water. They were going to order a really limited quantity from the manufacturer, and after the announcement, they're like, okay, we're going to have to order more, which is the best position that we could mm-hmm. possibly be in. You know, so now the only complaint I have is that they're not here yet.
Nice.
So that's a good complaint. Still have the only one. I should have brought it. I wish I would have brought it up here, but next time.
And they drop, you said, in August, I
August,
think, before
yeah.
the show?
August, yeah. So they'll be all over. Any place they sell musical instruments will be able to
like
get
Guitar
one.
Center.
Guitar Center,
like that,
Sam Ash, Sweetwater, Tillmann in Europe, anywhere. Basically anywhere that you can buy guitars, you can buy that guitar.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's really
man.
Exciting.
Huge.
That's exciting.
And it sounds like you're taking that even further. Like we were talking a little bit about it before the show, you guys did a kind of a solo album launch.
That's right.
And that was also a huge success. So
yeah,
give us the backstory behind that.
So I've spent the majority of my career playing other people's songs. You know, after I did those first few tours on my own, I kind of realized pretty quickly what I wanted to do was play guitar. That's all I wanted to do. And I didn't really have this super desire to like play songs like that I wrote. Like, of course it's fun, but what I wanted to do was play guitar. I didn't care who I played guitar for. I didn't care what kind of music it was, rock, funk, metal, whatever. I just wanted to play guitar. So that's what I did. I went out and got jobs playing guitar for other people rather than getting jobs, you know, that would hinder me from going on my own tours. I said, I'm just gonna stay on tour. And I kind of fell into this hired gun position as a guitar player. And for the past few years, I've been talking about doing a solo record, just writing my own music and doing my own thing. So I started, you know, I started thinking about doing a solo record, started thinking about doing something that's just uniquely mine, that's not, you know, not under the umbrella of anybody else, not, you know, not having anybody write for me, not having anybody take the reins, like just something that's mine. And it's a scary thing to do as a guitar player that's always played other people's music, you know, to go out and do something on your own. And then finally, you know, after talking about it for a few years, talking over with my manager, who always makes the best decisions for me, even when I don't know it myself, we decided to launch a Kickstarter campaign. And the Kickstarter was basically just to cover it was really bare bones. It was to cover recording, the production of the CDs, and the first leg of a United States tour. So nothing overseas, nothing extravagant. You know, we're not asking for the world. We're asking for $20,000, super modest amount to cover the studio costs, the actual making of the CDs, the promotion of the album. I'll have to hire a PR team and stuff, and to get, you know, a van or a bus and hire some people to go on tour with me. So we thought $20,000 should cover it enough that, you know, I'll be okay if I have to put some of my own money in, we'll be okay. So we set the 30-day goal for $20,000. It was 9 in the morning. I hit go, I made it live, I announced it, and then Josh and I went to the gym. And we hit that $20,000 before we left the gym.
That's wow.
It was crazy. Insane. Like, it was so nuts. You know, it was 11:15. I'm sprinting through the gym, you know, in Louisiana where Josh is from, going, oh my God, like, making no sense. Like, oh, thing, God, we did the thing. Like,
you're like, people love me, it turns out.
Yeah, well, and it was kind of that, honestly. Like, it was the, like, they liked me, you know, because you never know. You never really know if people are following you because of who you work with. Mm-hmm. Or if people are following you because they actually care about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So to actually get that validation that, you know, not only are people following me because of who I play guitar for, but they actually want to hear what I'm going to do on my own. And they care so much that they're willing to put their own $10 forward and actually take the time to get their card and type it in. And, you know, like, it's not like a, oh, you know, yeah, cool, I'll hit like. They got their card out and they put their $10, their $100, their, you know, $50, whatever it was, to say, I believe in this, I believe in you, and I want to make this happen. And I have cried so many times because you don't, it's emotional to say, like, to get that gratification of, like, what I'm doing is important and not just to me. It's a
and they're doing it for you before you've even, like, produced the, you know, the music.
It's a
belief. Yeah, they're doing it saying, we believe in you above they're and beyond, me, like, yeah. Hey, we're just buying a product or service from you. They're just completely betting on you as a human. Totally. Which is particularly awesome. So yeah, huge congrats on that.
Thank you so much.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And so, you know, obviously Alice Cooper's amazing and I'm sure you've loved his music for a long time, but who are some of your motivators as far as musicians go growing up? Like, who did you look at when you were a young kid and, like, idolize and imagine being like and wish you could pick their brain as a young musician? And then now, have you had a chance to meet some of those musicians, and what's that like?
So the first one, you gotta see Crossroads.
Right.
You gotta see Crossroads, because that scene in that movie, like, I still aspire. The other guitar player in the scene is a guy named Steve Vai. And I still, to this day, aspire to be Steve Vai in Crossroads. Like, to this day, because his playing is so effortless, and he's so cool. Like, and his what he's playing is so fun, and he's making it look so easy and fun, even though it's super technical and hard. Like, you know, I aspire to that level of joy and creativity and just overall awesomeness in my guitar playing.
Okay.
And he was actually the person that approached me to release my first solo single, Pandemonium, which came out last year. The first time I met my hero, the reason I started playing guitar, he said to me, I'm putting together a compilation album of female guitar players. Would you want to be a part of it? And that's how my first solo song came out. Like,
that's
He said, do you have any songs you could contribute? And I said, yeah. Absolutely.
You're like, will you sign my chest? Yeah, I'll write it right now.
That's exactly what it was. And Josh kind of gave me a look like, you do? and after, as we were walking out of the venue, he said, what song are you doing? And I was like, I have no idea. Then I went home. Go. And I, you know, the next day I started writing, and that was the song that became Pandemonium. That was my first single. And as soon as I did that, then I had the bug. And I was like, okay, now I know I can do it. Now I know not only did I come up with something, I came up with something that I love. I love that song, and everyone that heard it loved it, and I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. And that's when the real plan was born, like, okay, let's make more of this and let's make it happen.
That's cool.
That's awesome.
I think that just goes to show, I mean, the success motivates, your own success motivates, and I don't know how many times it's happened for me. It sounds like it's happened for you, and I know it's happened for you too, Greg, but, you know, you accomplish something and it makes you think bigger, and then you accomplish something and it makes you think bigger, and you accomplish something and it makes you think bigger, until you realize the common ground with all these big hitters is just this belief system. Mm-hmm. You know, how big are you thinking? Like, what can I do? What can I do? And that's what I always try to relay to my guys, and I see it in people like you and people that I've met that I really look up to, whether they're business guys or entertainers or whatever. There's just like a I know I can belief, and it's not always like something that happens like from the get-go where you're just like, oh, I can, and it's just in you. It's you step towards it. You take a step and be like, I did that. That was easy. Oh, now, like, you know, now I'm known around the world for this. Oh, well, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do this. I want to do that. And I've met so many people that have had, like, you know, oh, crack the window, then slam the window open, run through, kick the door down. And it's cool to see it happen. Mm-hmm. And it's moments like that where you're like, I want to do something because somebody is asking it of me. All right, I'm going to do it. I did it. oh, that was easy.
Now it's next.
I'm taking it over.
Totally.
Yeah, that's exactly. I love that.
Yeah, all it took was that one single for you to go, okay, this is this is the next step for me.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, that's totally awesome. And then last thing we gotta mention before we break here, you, I don't know if this is the most people you've ever played for, but it sounded like you got hooked up with the WWE somehow and ended up playing WrestleMania, which is their like biggest show of the year by an order of magnitude. So you know, you got to give us the behind the scenes of that experience, how that was.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
It was so nuts. Like, you know, it wasn't the biggest show I've ever played. It wasn't the most, well, let's say it wasn't the most people I've ever played in front of, but it was by far the biggest show I've ever played. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there was, I think there was 70,000, 78,000 there. I've played in front of about double that, but the feeling was completely different. You know, it's not often, I keep saying this about WrestleMania, but it's not often that you get the most passionate fans, the brightest and most passionate and most, the most ingrained fans, like the diehard
just
fans
in tune,
that
yeah.
come from all over the world for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you do, you know, a huge UFC event or you do in, you know, the Super Bowl or whatever, you get the biggest fans from that city or from those two cities or whatever it is. But for WrestleMania, you get the biggest fans from all over the world, and those are and they all converge on this one event, and the energy in there is like nothing I've ever felt before. Like it was insane, and the being back there was, you know, the wrestlers have so much humility, they have so much integrity, they have so much, you know, it doesn't get to their heads, you know. Josh has a clothing brand called Beverly Kills, and one of the shirts I wear all the time is called, it says, "Stay humble or be humbled." And those people in that industry embody that to a T. They are humble, they're kind, they're generous. You know, we were walking around, like, we couldn't believe we were there. We just appreciated to be there, and everyone was walking around thanking us for being there.
Like, yeah, I couldn't believe it.
What are you thanking me for? Like, I wanted to go get someone some coffee or something. Like, can I help? Can I break some sets down or something? Like, you know, and that experience of being there and playing, and especially playing Shinsuke Nakamura's theme, you know, which was the match I was most excited to see, seeing Shinsuke Nakamura and AJ Styles was the match I really wanted to see. So that was it was cool to be a part of making that match come to life. It's really exciting.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
I think it's cool what she's talking about with the humbleness. And we were talking before we were on the podcast about how that starts from McMahon, who's just a great businessman. Talk about a dedicated guy. Josh was kind of speaking about how he went there early to the arena, and McMahon had his desk, and he was there at 9 a.m. and the show was at night, and he was just focused in changing this camera angle and that camera angle, and how he is like that. And I know my good friend Scott James, he's a partner of mine on our clothing line. He is friends with McMahon, and he spoke about how what a humble guy he is and how they treat everyone with respect. And it's cool that the leadership dictates that.
Definitely.
You know? And it should be that way. Like, you know, we're all just people. There's nothing more irritating than somebody that is looking for the right person to be nice to.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That gets on my nerves so bad. Like, oh, well, I didn't know that was the person I was supposed to be nice to. Or
be nice to everyone.
Be nice to everyone.
It's not like do as I say, not as I do. Like, they definitely lead by example from the top. And it trickles down from the top. You know, you talk about Vince McMahon. You know, have you seen him on the cover of Muscle and Fitness? I mean, that guy he leads by
all
example
natural
in
too,
every
all
way.
And he's like 72 now or something.
I think
ridiculous.
He's on trifecta, to be honest.
Let's send him some.
Nice.
And you know, and it's cool. I try to surround myself with people that embody that. You know, we were talking earlier about Ingrid Romero, my trainer who trains the girls at Team Edge, and Michaela, and like all these people. Ingrid is another great example of a great businesswoman. You know, her and her husband run a successful training business, and they have a supplement line, and they have a clothing line, and they have, you know, like all these things, and they train jiu-jitsu, and they have twin boys, and they have this amazing work ethic, but they take time for everybody, and they're super humble, and they're super grateful for everything they have, and there's never a point where they come across like, you know, I'm too good to train this person or work with this person or anything. Or Vince McMahon could very easily say, like, you know, all these, you know, oh, that's the guitar player. She's playing for like 30 seconds. I don't need to give her any time of day. Like, but they took the time to get up, shake my hand, shake Josh's hand, and thank us for being there. And, you know, people like that are the important people to have on your team. Mm-hmm. People like that are the important people to have in your team, not just in training or not just in music, but in life. You know, people that elevate you and inspire you and make you want to be good because they're good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, 100%.
Run with the wolves, become a wolf.
Yeah, I love that.
That's true. And I mean, a lot of that comes down to ego. People that are secure with themselves and don't have anything to prove, you know, those are the kindest people I've seen. You know, the most successful folks, they're humble. They really are.
Yeah, they have Josh's brand has another shirt that says "Ego Kills Talent." That's the other one I wear. That "Stay Humble or Be Humbled" and "Ego Kills Talent"
on stage. Is that BeverlyKills.com?
BeverlyKills.com. BeverlyKills.com. At BeverlyKillsCA.
That's funny. And, I've seen a bunch of those shirts, and I had no idea. Josh and I haven't been in touch for a little while now. I can't remember the last time we actually hung. It was probably a couple years ago. But I've seen those shirts. I didn't realize those were yours. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's cool to be able to represent something, not only that, yes, I love him very much, but I feel so strongly about those words, kills talent. Like, you know, there's a reason why I want to wear that on stage to everybody that I play in front of to convey the message. Like, yeah, you can be up here. You know, you can find your way. You can pursue your dreams. You know, that's what the brand is all about, the message all about. You can follow your passion, pursue your dreams, and be successful without letting your ego get in the way, without losing yourself, losing your integrity. And that's the kind of thing I think we can all agree that it's important to represent.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. And I've seen it, you know, what you're talking about, just being humble and being kind, et cetera. You don't have to give your time to everyone, but you have to treat everybody with respect, in my opinion. But even that little bit of respect, even a little bit of time, will motivate some people.
Yes.
And somebody, you know, if things seem so out of reach, and I've had it happen to me a bunch of times because I have guys that come over from all over the world and they pay to come train at the gym, et cetera, et cetera. And like, it's crazy. You're just a normal guy. I'm like, yeah, everybody is a normal person. And once you are in front of somebody that you look up to, Roy Jones Jr., Mike Tyson, MC Hammer, those are three guys that I met that were like, when I was a kid, that was like, the who's who. I mean, right. That, you know, I used to carry a CD around, a DVD around of John Jones, and I had all their fights recorded on VHS.
Right.
And used to watch those things. And those guys are just regular guys. When you have somebody treat you with respect and realize, like, I'm a person, you're a person, you know, that's a powerful thing, because it can make you think bigger. Just that other thing that is so important. So I think that's cool. And I'm pumped to hear that you're taking your success and you're giving back by being kind and being humble.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Awesome. I know we're a little over here, so.
Yeah. We don't take up all the Hurricanes' time. Right. Josh is going to be charging us here in a little bit.
That's true. He's tapping his watch. We know this one.
That's awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for having us, you know, being part of this podcast and letting us get a little insight on somebody who's risen to the top of one of the most sought after and one of the coolest professions in the world. I mean, that's something that doesn't happen every day. So we got to get to hear from you, hear about your story, and we appreciate you being a part of the Trifecta family also. And hope to come back once you've accomplished that next step of things. Don't forget about the little people over here.
Yeah, no, not as long as you keep feeding me.
Awesome. So that's another CaliCast, guys. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys.